Good afternoon. So last time we started talking about kind of detecting and stopping malware. Now that we talk kind of about malware sort of hiding in other files, like how to detect that and combat it. And we started with kind of our simplest strategy, which is just kind of get a list of what files are okay to run and don't run anything else. Or at least detect if those files change and do something about it. And the answer to this is kind of not really a practical strategy in practice, because with some limited exceptions, people get really annoyed when you say, here's this short list of things you can do with your computer, and that's it. And also they have problems with, like, if you want people to run a Python interpreter or a JavaScript interpreter, you know, that probably doesn't work out very well, because people are going to type code out and that code's going to run. So we wanted to look for ways to kind of to mark what is malware and find it kind of automatically. And one strategy we were starting to explore was this idea that we'd write patterns that represent our possible pieces of malware. And we need a pattern because we see that with viruses, which I mentioned were kind of our first big malware problem, you know, we can't just say this particular file is what the malware looks like, because it looks different in every infection, potentially. So we need some way of matching kind of a subset of that file. And our kind of simplest tool for that were these regular expressions, which give us patterns to that we can specify that match typically the machine code of the malware. So before we go on to talk a little bit more about that regular expression style matching and why it's relatively efficient, and also some things to make it more efficient that might have trade-offs. Questions about things we covered last time? Okay. So the language that Flex supports, which is an example of the sort of tool set you'd have for this, is that we can kind of specify alphanumeric characters match themselves. And for other characters, we can put a backslash in front of them. And if we just want to match arbitrarily bytes, we can do that. We can just specify, I want to match hex3c that byte. We can match that. And we can also match kind of groups of possibilities and duplications of possibilities. And we haven't seen like a case yet for why would I want to do like something repeated in some way. We'll probably have some later. But these, you know, alternatives like obviously let us do things like there's multiple variants of this instruction. How do I deal with that? And also we have a way of matching kind of any byte somewhere, which deals with, we saw in Vienna, like we changed some of the constants. We can just say that's not, you can match anything there. You don't have to match that specific machine code you saw in your one sample, because you know it's going to be different in every single file. So, mention that Flex is the tool we'll be using in an assignment. It's not actually intended for this, but I want to have kind of experience with something lower level. We'll mention some kind of tools that are more geared towards malware detection. But for the most part, those tools have kind of a similar-ish way of specifying patterns, but maybe with some extra features that, you know, we'd have to think about how we actually implement those. And also with a bit more ease for matching binary stuff. Like here, when we're matching binary stuff, we have this kind of awkward, you know, that Flex is really designed to match text, so we kind of, we can do it, but it's a little awkward. And we saw that Flex, you know, is just kind of exposing pretty directly what the pattern matching is doing. It goes character by character, and when it matches one of the patterns we have, it runs some piece of code we have to handle that. And you know, this gets converted into basically some custom piece of C code, you know, that will go through character by character. And kind of what's happening under the hood is that it's going to make this state machine. So internally, Flex is going to assign basically, say that this is state 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's going to like assign numbers to all these states, and it's going to have a table which says if in state 0, state 0, you know, in F, go to state 1. If it is a new line, go to state 5. Otherwise, go back to 0. No, it's probably the sort of, or sorry, otherwise, go to 4. I should look at my picture. 4. So we'll have tables like that for every state. So the parsing process is basically just a series of table lookups. And the Flex tool is going to handle doing all that sort of match conversion to produce all those tables and all that. Now we have a bit of a more complicated scenario when, you know, we have cases where it's not clear, you know, what to do as far as matching a partial thing. So if we match FO and then we don't see another O, what we actually want to do is we want to match kind of to any characters. And the simplest way of representing this is with backtracking. That will kind of say we go to state number 4, but we also go back 2 characters. So in this sense, you know, we're getting into a case where we're not going to have our full advantage of going character by character for real. We're going to duplicate some characters with this model. So to give an example of how this would work, if I'm looking at this string here, we're going to start an A, and then we're going to go, and that's going to match the any non-new line character pattern. We're going to go to B, that's going to match that again. Then we find an F, we go to our state for F, then O, and O, that matches, just goes through each of those transitions. And when we go to FO, we're going to go back 2 characters and match the F with a dot. When we see that the next character is not another O, and then keep going from there. So this gives us kind of mostly one pass matching, and we can actually kind of actually make that better than one pass. We can make it really one pass if we extend our state machine some. With some extra information about what to do, we can maybe make it even one pass. You know, this probably gets complicated when we have a lot of patterns, so in practice that might not be a thing you do. You might just say it's okay to go over some things multiple times. But this basically means we can get to mostly the speed of file IO-ish for doing this matching. And we can make this handle multiple patterns well. So to give an example of multiple patterns, you know, here I have, you know, 3 kind of overlapping patterns, and I have a state machine that encompasses them all in kind of in a merged way where we're kind of sharing some of the work between matching all of them. We probably expect, if we're thinking about virus patterns and other malware patterns, that the patterns would probably overlap a bunch. So this seems like pretty useful. So we showed the example of using Flex, which is intended for parsing programming languages. And real antivirus probably uses a custom pattern engine. And we're not using a real one of those because, well, that solves kind of the problem of what the pattern engine is doing. And also, I know of basically 2 examples that are like kind of publicly available. Most of the anti-malware vendors don't share their kind of internal stuff. So to give an example, like, how would we actually use this? Well, we can say, okay, I know what the machine code for, say, Vienna's fixed part looks like. And I can just have a pattern which is those bytes and have some code that runs when that happens. I can also make placeholders where patterns where I have the code, but I know there's some parts that get replaced. That's fine. I can represent those placeholders as you're saying, there could be any byte here. And I can look for specific segments of the code. And, potentially you can imagine extending this where I don't just have to print out that I found it. I could, keep track of some extra information. For example, if I wanted to, check extra, I could, check what that placeholder was, because remember, we can look at YY text to see exactly what match. We can look at that location in there and say, is this a number which means it's actually Vienna, or is it some false positive or something like that, something else going on? And I can also keep track of variables I can make sure I see both of these before I match, and so on. So we can come up with kind of more complicated rules using this foundation. And most importantly, we're not doing any really expensive scanning of every file we're looking at. So this is kind of the kind of technique that anti-malware software generally starts with. And it's obviously a thing that malware authors are going to respond to. So here I have some possible responses malware authors could have. So one thing we might imagine doing is, we know NOP is an instruction that does nothing. Let's just add NOPs when we copy the virus code. Just insert random NOPs between certain instructions. Every 8 instructions or so, insert a few random NOPs. Another thing we might do is, instead of appending to the executable, let's just replace code in the middle of it. Is that going to make things, how's that going to happen? Another thing we could imagine doing is, the Vienna code, hard codes SI and so on. What if we just randomly chose what we use for SI among the available registers, instead of always using SI for that? I just said, are it going to be SI or DI? We'll just choose each time. Or what if we use that cavity loader strategy where we said, I'm not going to put the code at the end. I'm going to find holes and then have some loader we jump to that copies those into one place in memory and jumps to them. So think about which of these do you think is going to be easiest or hardest for a signature writer to deal with? Where are we going to most be able to use this kind of regular expression-based signatures to handle? And what we'd be aiming for is, we want to still reliably detect Vienna and not detect other random things. You can check with your neighbors, see if you agree on what's our rough ranking. How bad these ideas are for our signature authors.
Because you can't.
I guess I should mention the other thing you might think about is how hard are these to actually implement in the virus? Because some of them look easier than others, certainly. Let's start with which one people think is hardest. So who thinks A is the hardest of these to deal with in signatures? Okay, how about B? C? Okay, D? Okay, so we have our class's ranking is that this is hardest, possibly followed by this. Okay. My ranking is that those are the hardest. I think if we think of how do we deal with A, well, we're going to have to insert kind of optional things. We have a way of doing that with regular expressions. The flex syntax lets us say, here's something that may happen 0 or 1 times, or 0 or n times. So we can absolutely represent, there's a bunch of knops between each of these instructions. So that's a thing that's doable. It's going to be annoying, and it's going to make our pattern larger, and therefore make a much bigger state machine. So it's going to make the matching slower, but it's a thing we can deal with. And I would say C is the same way, that we have to think of for each instruction the alternatives with all the possible registers. We can represent that in our pattern with an alternation. It's going to be a lot of work. It's going to be even more work if we want to make sure the registers match each time. If we don't care about that, maybe we have some false positives. That maybe, hopefully we have enough code matching, that's not an issue. But like that's what we're gonna have to do. So pretty annoying for A and C. So D, people said, oh, that's annoying because it's not gonna be split up. So the reason I don't think D is annoying is because our pattern is the loader. We just match the loader. If the loader isn't changing, it's just as easy to match as the virus was before. So if we want to do D to be effective, it would need to be like combined with A and C. And this is, in fact, a thing real malware does do, but it's not. And I would say putting the stuff out in random places, for the techniques we've seen, that doesn't seem to hurt or help. That we haven't looked in particular places anyways, we're just looking for specific things. So questions on sort of my reasoning, and I guess I'd like to get across, like for D, like the kind of a thing to think about is, you know, we don't have to match, we have lots of choices of what to match, and the challenge for the malware author is to make it so we have nothing useful to match, not just, you know. So a common kind of mistake that probably the other authors make is thinking, oh, if you're obscuring all this stuff, maybe that's useful to you, but for signature detection, it matters. Is there a piece we can hang a signature on, basically? Not, can we find signature detect everything? questions, comments? Okay. So, talked about this kind of relatively efficient technique here, but you can see that even with these very simple patterns, we have a bunch of states, and this is going to get much bigger if we like want to detect like, you know, 1,000 different viruses, which even 20, 30 years ago would have been pretty common. And so even though this is like pretty much about as efficient as we can imagine for like scanning for all these patterns, and we're kind of going character by character doing nice simple table lookups, those tables are going to become huge. We're going to have tons of states. It ends up being kind of slow. And if we have thousands of pieces of malware we're looking for, and like half our patterns are complicated by needing to like do all that stuff to deal with scenarios A and C we saw, that's going to take up a lot of space, you know, to do all that matching. It's going to be pretty resource intensive. So one thing, practically speaking, that anti-malware scanners are likely to do is try to identify fixed strings for that they can look for, because those are the simplest things to look for. And we can use not a character by character type state machine scanner, we can do something simpler. So we can like just go over every 16 byte segment of our input and say, okay, if I see something here, this is part of the pattern for virus A, B, or C, if I see these particular set of bytes. And we can use this rather than having one big state machine for all the possible things that we go through. We can just first check, you know, these patterns, we know they have some fixed sequence of bytes. Is that even there? If it's not, let's not bother. And we can make this scanning really fast by using a hash table. So instead of even storing the whole thing, we can just make a hash table and do a hash lookup. You know, and it, you know, there's some, and that should make it pretty fast to scan through a huge file and sort of limit down the patterns we need to look for and make that scanning more efficient, which is kind of important once we have like tens of thousands of different malware encoded that we could potentially look for. So the other concern, you know, is that reading the files is kind of slow. Like I said, we're like doing it basically as fast as we read the files. Like normally when you like start an executable, we don't read through, we actually read through the whole executable, and that's kind of not that fast. So a lot of anti-malware software has historically kind of tried to avoid scanning the whole file. So they might have heuristics, like let's check the entry points and the end only, or let's, you know, check certain known offsets from the entry point, things like that, or use some guesses for where to look and not look everywhere. And that they did this is probably one of the reasons why we saw the variety of infection techniques for viruses, is because, well, you know, if you thought, oh, I just need to look at the entry point, a bunch of those other techniques kind of got around that and made it so they needed to resort to the more expensive look through the whole thing scanning. So to give a concrete example of what signatures might look like, I'll give the example of ClamAV. So ClamAV is some open source malware scanning software. It's mostly used for email installations. So if you run a mail server and you want to scan all the attachments people receive for malware, this is one of the pieces of software you would be likely to use for that. And it's open source, so we actually know how it works and how its malware signatures work. And it actually supports a whole bunch of different types of signatures because there's different levels of sophistication. So it does support what we talked about, kind of looking for fixed strings or that basic regular expressions, looking for patterns with where we can have alternatives and duplication of things, but we can represent that as a nice state machine. It also supports kind of simpler matching where you just say, I know what the file is exactly, here's its hash. Look for that. Or I know the executable will have a code part. You know, the second load segment will look like this, let's look for that. And in order to do that, it actually has a built-in parser for executable files and also for like zip archives. And the built-in parser for zip archives is why, if you've seen malware spreading by having password-protected zips, that's part of why. It has some more complicated signatures. So it supports something that goes beyond normal regular expressions, things which are not something we could represent with Flex. And it kind of most importantly supports kind of signatures where we combine a bunch of these signatures together. So we can say, I want it to match this regular expression and this one and this one and this one. And then it's actually this piece of malware rather than just matching one big pattern for it. That's pretty common. And another interesting thing it supports is it supports matching on icons. So with email, kind of a big concern is something that, you know, an executable being sent as if it's another type of file. So specifically to detect that, it looks for icons that are icons for the wrong type of file and says that's a problem. And so their signatures are, you know, we have hashes. So here we have signature and identifier for them. And simple regular expressions. And because this is actually built not to match source code, but to match, you know, sort of binary data, the regular expressions are on hex instead of on bytes. So you can see here that this is the signature for Vienna. It says, sorry, look for 5051E8, any byte. Remember this is hex, so two characters is byte. Then zeros repeated a whole bunch of times, then that. So it has this specific pattern for look for. It has a bunch of different variations on Vienna that it has patterns for. And I mentioned combining signatures together, so that's kind of a common thing. So here's an example of that. So here we have a signature which says, I expect you to match pattern 6 and pattern 0 and pattern 1 and either pattern 2 or 3 and pattern 4 or 5, and then here are those patterns. And we can see one interesting special feature where it marks a pattern with a 0 to indicate, 0 colon to indicate it has to be at byte 0 of the file. So we need to see that, you know, the file is a certain type of file based in the beginning, and then we look for the other pattern. The idea. So questions on these kind of signature examples? Yeah. The question is, how is it matching all these? I do not know the internals of it. I think part of this format is precisely to give flexibility to implement that in different ways. The most straightforward thing to do would be to say, these are all basic regular expressions. We can match them all at the same time by making one big state machine and do that with one pass. And then afterwards, we check whether the condition is met. But that's not the only possibility. And we mentioned the idea of like, you know, oh, there's a big fixed string here. We might have a special fixed string matcher to make things faster or something like that. Does that answer your question? But I think this gives you an example of where there's lots of choices in how to implement the details of that matching especially those ideas of let's not have a state machine for all the possible patterns at once, let's try to trim that down a bit. And here, the most obvious way of doing that is that you know you can tell that pattern 4 or 5, which have these big, long, thick strings, well, relatively long, have to be there. So maybe if you were clever, you could make something that looks for those strings before looking for the other things. So that, yeah. But if I were implementing this like we're going to do in our assignment next week with Flex, I'd probably code up all the patterns and then have something at the end which says, is the kind of combination of them met. Questions, comments? Okay, so I mentioned ClamAV signatures. So ClamAV, I think, is one nice concrete example. ClamAV also supports, and there's maybe the other same signature format that like is actually documented, or something called Yara, which kind of looks similar to this sort of thing, but maybe is a little better documented. But you know, is a thing that other software uses. This is an example of like, this is actual anti-malware software. We can look at and explain exactly how it works. So we talked about signatures for detecting kind of malware where we know this is what the malware looks like. We want to make a signature for it and detect it in the future. A common goal is to detect malware we might not have seen in its exact form. So another thing to do is think about signatures that would detect kind of that type of scenario. We know we're not going to have something that exactly matches what we've seen before. And there's kind of two different strategies we can have there. So one is to kind of look for things that are anomalies, but aren't like the code for Vienna, but they're just things that shouldn't be there. And another is to, instead of looking at the code, to try to identify the behavior and see if this software is doing things that normal software shouldn't be doing. So one idea, for example, might be that, well, a typical executable has this kind of structure where we have a header, program header, if we're thinking on, this is on Linux, and we have 2 segments of loaded data, typically. And if, you know, one thing, the virus might edit the length, but the kind of convention on Linux is that the entry point is probably here, the normal entry point. So one heuristic we might have is we might say, you know, the way executables usually work on our system, usually they're compiled such that the code starts in the first segment. If it starts in the second segment, something suspicious, maybe we should look at that. Another thing that might happen is maybe the virus adds a new segment and say, huh, that's weird. You know, the last segment's usually not the code one. Like, we can just say match. We can also, like, maybe notice that the editing of the header, we mentioned that, like, in traditional executables on Linux, like, we have kind of some redundant information about segments versus sections. We can say, oh, these disagree. Something probably edited this. You know, that might be the kind of thing we could look for to tell something's going on. And this kind of check if the entry point's in the right segment is something that some anti-malware software really did. And I think there's kind of 2 issues with this. So one is, of course, that there's no requirement that your executables work this way. So someone might legitimately have made an executable which has the entry point in a different place. Maybe they make it in a new compiler, and linker works differently. And the other is, of course, that, you know, this is actually not too hard to defeat. If you know you want to do it, it's not trivial. so maybe it's worth doing. But we can like run it, insert some code there, and the only code we have to insert to feed this checking might be code that jumps to the real code we inserted if we don't have much room to insert it, right? We just need to jump. Now that might be easy to find space for. So let's say our malware has done the, we have our one and sec two, segment one, segment two, and we inserted our code here that jumps to the code we appended. Something we might do to try to still detect that is we'll run this code in a VM for a bit and see if it switches segments relatively quickly. So that's kind of one. And so these are kind of like heuristics, and we see there's like this sort of, we're doing something that, I would say doesn't seem like a good long-term plan as an anti-malware author, but, it's probably going to work for a while, and it definitely is going to make things more annoying for malware authors to go around it. Also, I think it's risky because it says we're kind of depending on the way normal executables look, and probably we're going to find an exception somewhere eventually. They're going to be rare, so maybe that's worth it, but that's what we're doing. So another thing we can look for is calling library functions. So one thing with things like viruses that insert themselves into other executables is that they might want to call library functions, like to open files and things like that. And the way library functions are normally called is we have these stubs and these linking tables that have the information for them. If you're writing a virus that inserts itself into other software, that's actually pretty hard to use. You'd have to write a whole bunch of extra code to look at those tables, to maybe add something to those tables, and make it work correctly. So very often, they instead dynamically look up the functions at runtime rather than using the normal mechanism for running functions. And this is particularly true on Windows, for Windows viruses. It's really annoying to modify all that dynamic linking structure. So instead, you find the API call which says call a function by name and look up a function by name. So a common thing anti-malware software would do is they say, look for them hard-coding the names of these functions outside the dynamic linking tables. That's a weird thing to do, that real software would use the dynamic linking tables. So, this is something that, create extra work for the malware. Now, doesn't really create infinite extra work. They could actually do the work of modifying the dynamic linking tables. Probably that's tricky to do to make it work consistently. They could re-implement the library call. On Linux, this is usually pretty easy. Windows system calls are weird, so it's harder there. Mostly weird in being poorly documented. But it's doable. Or you can try to hide the names. And a very common strategy that the real malware did is hiding names. So what they'd often do is they'd store a hash of the name, and then they'd open up the library, scan the list of names in the symbol table part to find where the function to call was, and check if it matched the hash, so there was no name to match in, for the scanning software. No, we couldn't make a signature on that name easily. And this has the bonus of making it much more annoying when someone opens up the malware and reverse engineering tool. So that's kind of on some sort of miscellaneous heuristics, but you can think of these heuristics about how malware is structured, that especially for virus type malware, can be probably beneficial because these are, you know, these are things where it's going to give them a real cost to avoid this detection. It has the disadvantage that we're usually detecting things that aren't inherently illegitimate to do. So another thing we can try to look for is what the malware actually does. That malware does some things that literally no program should do. Right? Vienna like modifies random executable files. No program should do that. So instead of looking for the code of Vienna, maybe we can look for, does this code modify random executable files? And how do we do that? Well, we run it, perhaps in a virtual machine or an emulator, or perhaps we let it run normally, but we monitor what it does as it runs normally. And we can look for suspicious behavior, you know, modifying system files. Most software shouldn't be doing that. Modifying, you know, existing executables, opening network connections to suspicious places. So we can look at the behavior. And this has the big advantage that this is something that it's going to definitely have a cost for malware authors to change. If you have a virus that's meant to install itself on the system, doing that without modifying system files is going to be a real challenge. So how do we kind of implement this idea of we're going to run it and figure out what it's doing? And this idea of sort of monitoring what it's doing commonly is called hooking, that we want to get some sort of hook to know when software does something. And this is probably true regardless of whether we're running it in a VM or an emulator or on kind of the real OS. You know, we want to run it, but we want to have some of our code inspect the operations it's doing. So commonly we'll try to get some way for when it does accesses with the operating system to identify it's doing something. Let's look at that operation and see if it looks suspicious. So like when it's creating files or modifying files, that sort of thing. And there's been a lot of ways that anti-malware software has gone to do this. And kind of the most ideal way to do it is to have actual support from the operating system to let you get a record of what applications are doing. And these days, most operating systems have that support. So you don't need to resort to the other real techniques that real software has used that would be alternatives. So let's talk about kind of the OS support idea. Give some concrete examples there. So Windows has this notion of a file system filter driver. So you can install, as an anti-malware software, a driver that basically gets run every time a program accesses the file system. Every time it reopens, reads, writes, closes, etc. files, your code gets run. You can have a little bit of code there that decides what to do about it and to, like, you know, say, oh, we're accessing this system file. That seems weird. What do we do about it? And you can do this without sort of weird modifications to the OS. Linux has kind of similar ideas. Linux kind of has two mechanisms that fit in this category. Kind of the most directly equivalent to that file system filter driver idea is Linux has something called trace points and kprobes, where you can basically say, there's some function in the kernel that handles things like, you know, system calls or file IO. Whenever that would be run, please run my hooking function first. There's an API to literally request that. So run your function whenever this runs. And your hooking function can like log it or do whatever you want to do based on that information. Separately, there's a second mechanism we'll probably revisit later where you can select a program of interest and you can have a little code of your own run to check each of its system calls, each of its requests to the operating system, inspect them, and do whatever you want with that, including like deny them or log them somewhere or send them to another process to do something about. So this is kind of the tool that we have where we can have signatures which aren't regular expressions on data and code, but are kind of expressions about you made this, you opened a file here, that's sign that you're a malware. So we can do the same kind of ideas for signatures, but instead of matching the code, we're matching this kind of activities we've intercepted with these hooks. Questions about this hooking idea? I guess for hooking, I don't have a good example of doing this kind of in open source software because there's not much open source quote unquote endpoint security software, which is the typical software that would do this kind of thing. So as I mentioned on the slide, there are other ways we can get our hooks to run if we don't have OS support, and this is what antivirus software traditionally did, and probably also why antivirus software has traditionally been associated with instability. So one thing we can do is we can change how libraries are loaded. We can replace the library loader. So like when you call fopen, it doesn't run the library function, it runs the anti-malware software's fopen. We can replace the system call handlers in the OS, which will require to know exactly what version of the OS, but we could do that. Or we could use debugging support. So your debugger, you can set a breakpoint anywhere. We could just do that programmatically. We can just say, we're a debugger, here's my breakpoint. Run the program until the breakpoint, look at the registers, go to the next setting on breakpoint, run the program. We can just do that programmatically if we really need to. That's less ideal, not because it doesn't work, but because it's probably really slow. And I guess I should say the other sort of version of this less ideal mechanism is kind of a full emulator. That instead of actually running the code, we have an emulator where, by an emulator, I mean we have something which is basically doing check the opcode, if it's an add A and B, it's implementing the instruction set in software. But if we're doing that, we can easily inspect whatever we want. Of course, we have to write an emulator. It's a lot of work to maintain, but those exist. They're off-the-shelf software, so you can use it, and probably some anti-malware software does that. They actually use an off-the-shelf emulator where someone has gone through the insane effort of implementing the entire Intel manual in software. Maybe not the entire manual, most of the manual in software. So we have these other ideas for implementing. So these techniques with hooking, like these are kind of the most promising anti-malware techniques, I think, as far as if you can do it this way, like it's hardest for the malware software to adapt. And as our next topic, we're going to talk about kind of the main thing malware does to avoid signature detection and kind of the more sophisticated techniques that developed over the 80s and 90s to avoid signature detection. And what we're going to see that it's really valuable to choose things that this malware can't change because we can make the actual code and data of our malware kind of fully dynamic. And some malware has done this. By fully dynamic, I mean you can make it really hard, not impossible, but really hard to write a signature. And basically how we're going to do that is we're going to see that there's kind of an extension of that idea of let's insert a bunch of NOPs everywhere that's, going to be, kind of more and more annoying to detect. And this is something that real malware has done and is probably a reason why a lot of anti-malware software has moved, like, to focus maybe more on this hooking idea. So that's, I guess, where I'll leave us today. So next time we're going to talk about maybe a little more on these heuristics, and then we're going to talk about kind of this what's called polymorphic or metamorphic malware. So malware where it changes itself, like we had in that kind of ideas of inserting NOPs or changing the registers. It does those sorts of transformations, but like taken up a notch. to avoid signature detection.